Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Save the Kids podcast. It's your one-stop shop for raising kids in this tech-heavy world. We bring on professionals and experts to give you all the tools you need to help your kids become fire-breathing warriors that have the strength to break out of the mold society has put them in. At the end of the day, we're all here for one reason: to help save some kids. I'm your host, Nate Webb. Let's get to it. Hey, what's up, guys? Real quick, before we dive into the podcast episode, I want to let you guys know my voice will not sound so great in this episode. My computer, for some reason, reverted back to its default microphone when I hit record instead of my podcasting microphone. So the quality doesn't sound as great. I did try and make it sound a little bit better with some editing magic, but still, if you're thinking this doesn't sound as great, it's because that microphone switched when I hit record. Nonetheless, this is still going to be an amazing episode, so I hope you enjoy it.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Save the Kids podcast. It's your host, Nate Webb, live in Studio Salt Lake City area, and we've got a show for you today. We've heard a lot about the dangers of social media, and a lot of it is qualitative data, right? Anecdotal stories that really hit us in our feels, but I want to show you guys the real life stuff. And so I connected with a physician in Canada who sees medically just how dangerous social media can be for young kids. So I brought her here for the show today. Super excited. We got Dr. Allison. Is it Young? You Young? It's Young?
Yeah.
Okay. Young. She's a practicing family physician from Ontario, Canada. She's been practicing for the past 11 years, and over that time has become increasingly aware of the mental health crisis facing children and teens. After speaking with patients and examining the research, it's become clear that social media and video games are causing a significant deterioration in their mental health. She's hoping to raise awareness about this topic by educating parents and providing strategies to reduce harm caused by these devices. Welcome, Allison, to the show. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you.
I was so pumped. We're like, hey, so like, I don't know if you'd want to have a doctor on the show, but like, you know, and I'm like, yes.
I know. I feel like a weird imposter.
That's
something.
So awesome. So I got a lot of crazy people reaching out to me, and I was actually really stoked when we connected and put this together. So tell us a bit about yourself. How did you end up in this space advocating against the dangers of smartphones and social media for kids? Like, when did it pop up on your radar? Because you've been a physician for a long time.
I know. And honestly, I feel like I'm late to the game and I should have got there sooner. But so I've been practicing for over a decade. And I would say that my colleagues and I, there's a few doctors that work in the same office with me, we've all seen an increase in mental health visits over the past several years, like definitely predating COVID, but different than like when I trained. So there's been this change and, you know, more visits for depression, anxiety, ADHD, more like self-harm, a lot more suicidal thoughts, a lot more admissions for suicidal attempts.
And how young are these kids?
I'd say the youngest that I've had admitted was 12. And then, more high school typically, but early 20s as well. Right. There's quite a few. We all kind of talked about it for a long time. Like, what's up with these kids? Is this just the way it is now? Like, we were asking the same questions. Right. Like, what's going on? It's nothing that we learned about in training. And then I think what tipped it off for me is I started to have a lot of kids coming in and they would check all the boxes for these different diagnoses, and you start them on treatment. You know, they'd be on one medication, two, sometimes three. We'd be changing medications and they just weren't getting any better. And I'm like, what's going on? Like, something's not adding
up. Senses are tingling.
So I started to talk to them from a different angle, like get to know them a bit better and say, like, you know, what are you doing in your spare time? Like, what are your hobbies? Right. What brings you joy? And it was interesting because time and time again, they would kind of look at me blankly and then they would just be like, oh, I just go on my phone or I just go on YouTube. And I'm like, okay, there's got to be something to this. So anyways, when I went into the research, I was like, wow, this is a thing. And that's when, you know, I came across like Save the Kids and Wait Till 8 and some of these accounts. And I was like, I just feel like from my perspective, seeing these things clinically, I felt like I had to reach out because it's just becoming almost, it feels impossible to help some of these kids.
For the last 4.5 years, I've been a school counselor. And I would meet with kids all the time that are like, I need to be transferred out of this class. I need to change my schedule. I just can't with this teacher. I just can't pay attention. I think I have ADHD. I think I need to go get medicated or whatever. And I'm like, okay, can I just by chance see your screen time app? Like just whip that out. Just look at it. And like, without doubt, they got over 7 to 10 hours, like during the school day, that they're on their phone. And so I'm like, how about we try to cut down just one hour off that phone.
Yeah.
And then like magically they're like, oh, I don't think I have ADHD anymore. I'm like, man, what if you went and got medicated because of you feeling like this? And then like, you know, not screwed things up, but kind of like made it even worse because you're getting medicated for something you don't need to be medicated for.
But I mean, this is what's scary too, is there's now a whole whack of these, I don't know what you would call them, companies or business models that you can just go online and talk to a doctor or a nurse practitioner or whoever, and basically fill out a questionnaire and get diagnosed and treated for ADHD. And like, I have a hard time believing that they're diving into any of those questions, right?
I think kids should like go on a doctor should, I mean, it's hard to make this like, you know, policy law practice. There's a lot of stuff that goes into medical laws, but like, you know, making it common practice to get kids to like have a screen fast, so speak, for a couple days before running tests for ADHD so that they've been without it for a little bit before they go and like, oh yeah, you're squirrely. Let's put you on all the Adderall, Ritalin. Let's do this. Come on, let's do it. It's like, no, maybe not. Maybe just take away the screen for a little bit.
I know.
Yeah.
And I think it's tough because I think back to my training and we weren't taught about any of this because it wasn't a thing when we trained. So, you know, not necessarily the fault of so many doctors, but they're not asking because they just haven't picked up on the correlation.
So you became a doctor, what, like 2013, 2015?
I finished my residency in 2014.
Dude, I was close. Look at me. Okay. Yeah, you said like 11 years. So from 2014 to 2023, how has the landscape changed from your perspective as a doctor dealing with these youth?
I feel like there's a lot more kids that just, I think kids aren't able to sit in and feel their own emotions anymore. And I think that's largely because they are using devices to cover that up. Like there was a patient I had in yesterday, he's 19. I made him show his screen time. It was like 16 hours. And he was like, well, no, it's fine. Like I just have things running in the background. Like I always have videos and stuff that are just in the background. And I was like,
it doesn't count that.
Yeah, but you're still, he doesn't count it. And I'm like, but you're, so it's on all day, basically distracting you from feeling anything. So there's not feeling and avoiding of feelings, which leads them, I think, to come into the office a lot more and they're asking for medication. Right. They want to go on medication because they think that that's going to solve all their problems. They're a little bit less willing to want to do counseling. Yeah. I think some are pretty good and they will, but they don't necessarily see the value in it. And again, I think counseling is probably going to be less effective if we're not getting to the source of why this is happening.
Right. Oh man. There's just so much.
And just more school avoidance. Like it's just, they're just overwhelmed. They're overwhelmed by.
I feel like a lot of kids nowadays, like when we're talking about, you know, regulating their emotions, a lot of kids will be like, oh, I have anxiety. When in fact, they only experience anxiety, but don't know how to cope with it. And because they don't know how to cope with it, they feel like they have a disorder. And while they may not have a mental health disorder, their mental health fitness is probably garbage. And they feel like they have a disorder because they don't know how to cope with any of it. And so, it's It's been quite the whirlwind, I feel like, the last decade, ever since, you know, in 2012-ish, 13, when Instagram and Snapchat got huge. And then ever since then, we've just been swinging the pendulum further and further and further into the tech world. And I am hoping and praying it's going to start swinging the other way eventually. And the first step is a lot of advocacy stuff like this. And so what are some of the things that parents don't realize when they hand over a smartphone to their kids? What are some of the things that parents are just ignorant of that you wish that they would understand?
I think when parents hand over a phone, they don't realize that they're handing over a drug that is addictive. And I think it sounds like, well, you're not handing them cocaine or alcohol, but it is a drug. And the people behind these platforms are trying to make this device as 100%. Addictive as possible. So I get it. Like, parents are giving their kids a phone for a good reason. Usually it's safety is how it starts, or, you know, they just want their friends to be included to talk to their friends. So they give it, but what I want them to understand is it's a very slippery slope, and it happens very sort of quickly and inconspicuously to where they are addicted. And you can do the best that you can possibly do and talk to them and educate them. But if you give them this device that they carry around 24/7, even if you put all the parental controls on and you monitor, like, it's going to be an uphill battle the whole way. Obviously, you know, like in BC, actually, just last month, which is one of the provinces in Canada, a 12-year-old boy committed suicide because of sextortion.
12.
Like, so these things are happening. And I think parents need to be aware of how much they're happening and how it just keeps increasing. Like, suicide rates in teenage girls are as high as they've ever been in Canada and the U.S. We can't ignore that. Kids are committing suicide younger. Fifth and sixth grade is really high risk. So I would just say it's not like I'm not trying to fear monger, but at the same time, no, I think that in order to be educated and proactive in changing the narrative that we're seeing, like, we have to understand what a big problem this is.
Yeah, we can't be ignorant of it any longer. And giving all these facts is never meant to make you be scared, but rather to help you prepare. Help you prepare to raise kids in a tech-heavy world. And so, in your experience, do you have a recommendation for an age that might struggle less with smartphones, if you've been teaching them like healthy tech boundaries and whatnot? Like, eventually kids are going to leave the house. They're going to go to college. They're going to be adults and get their own smartphones. And you don't want to necessarily just chuck them to the wolves, you know, from 0 to 100. And so in your experience, I know there's no concrete age because everyone's different, but just in your experience, do you have a recommendation for when it might be less of an uphill battle, I guess, or an uphill battle that they're prepared to fight?
Yeah, I've thought about this a lot because it would be so nice to give an age, right? Just, you know, and like you say, it's so nuanced and individual. I think in general, maybe this is the long-winded way to answer your question, but I feel like when they start asking for a phone, which is probably when they're too young, is when the education starts. So of course you're going to say no at that time, but that's when you start to talk about it. They're going to continue to beg you for years to come. And so you can really prepare them for what's out there. So there's that. When you feel like they do need a phone for safety, get a dumb phone. You guys.
Yeah, we do. So many more actually amazing options. I found loophole ways to make them work in Canada. Pinwheel.
Which ones?
Trumi.
Pinwheel.
So, but Trumi all of them, same with Trumi. You just do the whole SIM card swap. You get the physical phone in the States, bring on over the boundary, and swap your SIM card, and it'll have the same restrictions and stuff. It'll work just on the other carrier.
I need to connect with them for sure. Yeah. So dumb phone, one of these great phones. When you feel like they might be ready, I think 16, I think 16 is like a decent
right.
ballpark. That being said, like there will be very responsible sort of beyond their years kids that might be ready
right.
earlier. There might be some that are definitely not ready until
right. they're there's going to be some 16-year-olds that no way on this green earth they will get a smartphone.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I tried to group, so I started to think about like what would make a kid ready for this responsibility, because it really is a responsibility. And I've got three R's to try to remember. So I think if you think about, are they responsible? Are they respectful? And are they resilient? So when it comes to responsible, you know, are they attending school, doing their best in school, doing their homework and their chores without a fight? Are they able to talk for themselves when they're ordering a meal at a restaurant or at the doctor's office? So that's kind of responsible. Are they respectful? So do they listen to the house rules? Are they kind to their siblings? Do they talk back a lot? Do they sneak around and lie a lot? How are they with their friends? Like, is there already a lot of drama? Because that's not going to get better on social media. And then resilient. So I think this is a huge one. So, you know, are they confident? Do they struggle with self-esteem? Do they already have diagnosed anxiety, depression, different mental health disorders that those kids are definitely going to struggle more when they get on social media? You know, like, do they have this overarching sense of who they are? And I think if you look at all of those things, like, most kids do not fit that bill before the age of 16. Yeah. And many after.
Yeah. No, it does make sense. It does make sense. And the part that I really like is that, guys, there's no one answer fix all to this. Every kid is so nuanced and different. And that's where you as a parent is going to have to pull up your big boy pants, big girl pants, and parent. A lot of times, us parents, we use technology as a babysitter. The smartphone, the tablet, whatever it is, as a babysitter. And then the tablet, whatever that is, ends up being the thing raising our kid. And then we wonder why they can't pay attention. When your 6-year-old knows how to operate the iPad better than you do, that might be a little bit of a red flag. But there's no...
We have to model the behavior and give them something better to do with their time so that they aren't so pulled in by the phone. Like, you've got to give them another
thing. We'll talk about modeling the behavior. Us adults are 1,000% worse at this than the kids are. Like, the older generations, the boomers and everyone, they rag on millennials and, you know, what's the youngest one? Gen Zs, whatever. And they're like, oh, these kids are so undisciplined. And back in my day, I had to walk to school uphill both ways in the snow and whatever. And I'm like, but y'all are the ones raising these kids. Like, you're on your phone just as much, if not more, than your kids. Like, your Facebook activities teaching them that you love them only when they get the first place medals and whatnot. And so I feel like.
And I have kids in the office, like, call out their parents all the time, because we'll be talking about the kid, and then the kid's like, well, mom, like, you're on your phone all the time too. And so it's true. Like, they're not wrong.
Kids are the most honest people on this planet when their parent is in a room with a different, more quote-unquote safe adult, right? Like, when they're with a doctor, a counselor, you will find out that parents, we need to be on the ball with this. You want your kid to be resilient? You need to be resilient. You want your kid to cope, and you want your kid to be able to pay attention and get off their phone? Maybe get off of yours. You know, it goes both ways.
Well, and I think what's interesting, I found it interesting too, that like, I've seen a fair number of parents who have ended up coming in for their own mental health because they're struggling so much to regulate their child and their child's cell phone use. So, you know, like, they're struggling, and that says a lot. Like, I feel like we've got this whole generation of kids that grew up, like Gen Z, that grew up and they're now telling us, like, this is a huge problem. We are not okay. Yeah. We're not well. And like, we can't just continue this this narrative. Like, right. We have to
and the
change
kids,
it.
They don't, they're not necessarily mad when we pull back and we start taking away these smartphones and stuff. In the end, they're super grateful. I saw an article that there's an entire group of like hundreds of kids in New York who opted out to like, they turned in their smartphones for dumb phones because they were just so sick of all the distractions.
Amazing.
They're like, what? Remember back when we would just hang out? We'd say, hey, let's go hang out at the pier after school. And then like when the streetlights turn on, that's when we know we need to go home. Like, don't.
Yeah, they are insightful. They know it's not. And this is the thing I try to explain too, is like, they know it's not good for them. They're aware, but they don't necessarily, depending on their age, like have the ability to do it on their own. Yes. Like, they need you,
mom and dad.
Step forth.
We got to start behaving like our prefrontal cortexes are developed, adults. Okay. Because they're not done till 25, y'all. And we're expecting our kids to make good decisions 100% of the time. No, That's not going to happen. It didn't happen when we were kids. Never in history. We just weren't constantly recording our mistakes and putting it on the internet. But I guarantee it, if they were on the internet, our tails would be between our legs like a little puppy dog because we're like, oh, snap. Never mind, little junior. You're not as bad because mommy and daddy. And so we need to go for it.
Well, yeah. No, I was just going to say that it reminded me too of how I'm sure you've heard this too. Like there's some people who will say, well, if we don't give them the social media, they're just going to go on it anyways. And they're going to go on it behind our backs. And so we may as well just give it to them and teach them how to use
right,
it.
Right. So just give up. Like, cool. Just give up.
Like I can't get on board with that because it's different than like, yeah, kids are going to get into some trouble. That's good. That's okay. Like kids get into trouble. Yeah. We all got into trouble. Seeing things we shouldn't see, but it's different seeing things at Timmy's house for half an hour than seeing it 24/7 on your own devices in your pocket. Like we just can't think of those things as equivalent.
And really, they only really seek those things out if we don't talk about it. Like limitations and restrictions without communication, yes, that results in defiance and everything. But if you talk about your values and why you have your restrictions and why you're doing the things you're doing, they're a lot less likely to go off the rails because it's no longer this forbidden fruit. It's just what it is. It helps them align with their values. When you make something forbidden and don't talk about it, of course they're going to go want to get it. Of course they're going to go want it. Like, that's basic. Have you been a teenager before, mom and dad listening? Like, that's how it works. And so if we just talk about it with the restrictions, I feel like we have a lot more success there. And so as we get down, you know, to scaring the crap out of all these parents, what can parents do? How can we mitigate these risks for kids and help them be resilient in a tech-heavy world? Be part of this tech-heavy world without having to, you know, be driven by the tech in the world.
Yeah, it's a great question. And as we've kind of already touched on, I feel like those conversations leading up for years are going to be, they're going to serve you well when you finally dive into this for your kid. I think diving in a slow sort of staged way is a good idea. So start with the dumb phone. How are they doing with the responsibility of that? And then you go maybe give some access to an app at a time kind of thing. You're going to want to set out the boundaries at the beginning. You know, this is mom and or dad and or whoever's phone this is. This is our phone. We own it. We have the right to take it back if we don't feel that you're using it responsibly. We also have the right, and I know this can be controversial too, but monitoring your kid's phone, like I really don't think in this day and age, it can be debatable. Like you kind of have to do it at least in the beginning. You have to do it because it's not like watching cable television in their room by themselves, right?
And honestly, here's the thing. It's not that you don't trust your kids. You don't trust the 5 million people that have access to your kids. And what better way to understand the digital landscape that your kids are involved in than looking at the digital landscape that your kids are involved in. Now, it doesn't have to be, you know, some public humiliation scenario where, you know, middle of the living room, let me look at your phone. What kind of naughty things you got on here, right? But, I mean, if you have boundaries in your home where, you know, before they go to bed at 9:30, 10 o'clock, they have to turn their phone in and plug it in the kitchen and the kids go to bed. Perfect opportunity for you and to anonymously look through their phone so that you can understand what they're seeing on the platforms. Because I guarantee you, you're like, well, I'm on TikTok. So, I mean, that, you know, I know what's going on there. The TikTok algorithm will not show you, mom, middle-aged woman, the same things it's showing to your teenage daughter.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I completely agree. Yeah. We need to be looking through our kids' phones. We need to be understanding what's being shown to them. So that we can understand how we can.
And if they show that they're being responsible about it, then it can be less and less over time, right? But also if you see that their mental health is deteriorating, you might have to go backwards and take some things away. And so there's that whole balance. I think obviously, as you know, and I've talked about a million times, like, please don't let your kids have a phone in the bedroom. I cannot tell you how many kids I see in the office. None of them sleep. And it's baffling to me because I'm like, teenagers love to sleep. What's happening that they're not sleeping? And so please just not in the bedroom. Then I feel like, I feel like from the research that I've done, it seems like if you're on social media, it really seems like 2 hours is kind of that point where if you go above that a lot, you're getting into dangerous territory. But if you can keep all of your entertainment device use to 2 hours or less, you're more likely to be okay.
I agree with that.
So maybe setting those boundaries in terms of time, and then making sure that they have, I think this is important. I listened to a really amazing podcast about dopamine and the addiction and how basically, you know, we're losing our dopamine baseline. And in order to get our baseline levels of motivation and things at a good level, we need these gaps in the day where you're not on your phone. So even if you're on your phone for a minute at a time, but you're picking up your phone every 5 minutes, like you're constantly getting those hits all throughout the day. So that's where I personally feel like the school policies come into play, because you can give a big chunk where a kid's not on their phone. You know, like at home, okay, we're not having we're all putting our phones in the basket from 4 to 7 and we're just going to do other things. Like whatever that looks like in your home and you guys can agree on it, got to have those tangible gaps where it's not in their pocket.
I like that. I like that a lot, because guys, you become so accustomed to that dopamine hit. I mean, just the mere vibration of the phone in their pocket, it makes them, your brain's like, oh, something's happening. And then like literally once they get it out of their pocket, there's such thing as like phantom like phone messages where, so for example, when I was 19, I left to go serve a mission for my church for 2 years. I went to the Philippines. But part of that was we didn't bring any personal devices with us. The church gave us the devices that we were going to use and whatnot. But while we were getting trained, so I went to the Philippines. I had to learn the Filipino language. And so I spent 9 weeks at the Missionary Training Center in Provo, Utah. And then we didn't have any phones or anything there. But it's literally because I'd been on my phone so much. And it was just a flip phone, mind you. Like, but I was so addicted to texting back then that like, even with no phone in my pocket, I was like, oh, there's a vibration. Oh, I felt something. Oh no, it's like phantom vibrations in my pocket. Like it's real, guys. Kids are spending their whole day distracted. I actually did an exercise in a class once with a bunch of freshmen, and I had them put them all their smartphones on the table. And then I said, okay, let's put all your smartphones on loud. I know you got them all silent and everything. Put them on loud. Put all the notifications on that you usually have on. And then we're just going to sit here for the hour. And every time your phone goes off, just go put a tally mark by your name on the board. And I kid you not, most kids had in between 150 to 200 notifications within that hour. And they weren't all messages. It was just kids. So by default, a lot of these platforms and apps, they have notifications on for anything. Someone you follow posted something. Someone you follow posted a story. Someone you follow liked something. This is a recommended something. And then like just on. And then a text and then a Snapchat, maybe a DM, an email, just ding, 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 ding. I'm like, and you're expecting them to pay attention? No.
Well, and I feel like as a parent, to try to have, because, you know, you could put parental controls on whatever. Let's say you turn off the notifications, like, but every time you turn around, it seems like there's a new app out that they're going to do the same thing. It's like, how do you, I feel like to me, it's work as a parent, hard work, regardless of whether you don't give or you give social media. But to me, giving it is much more difficult. Like you have to do it right, you're going to be, it's like a full-time job to police.
Yeah, well, a lot of parents, when I'm going through, like, okay, here's the things you need to keep up with. Here's the practical things you can do if your kid has a smartphone. And I see a lot of parents looking overwhelmed. I'm like, if this feels like a lot, it's because it is. And if you feel like you're not up for that, maybe it's not time yet for your kid to have a smartphone. If you're not ready, prepared to go through all this stuff, maybe it's just not quite time for your kid to have this smartphone then. And that's a hard pill to swallow for some people, but it is the truth, mom and dad. You know, this is going to be a full-time job for you. The younger you give your kid a smartphone, the more of a full-time job keeping them safe will be. Versus just talking about it.
Yes.
Just talking about it. And then eventually, when you feel they're ready, giving them that phone. Yeah.
And like if they, I think some parents too give the phone when, you know, oh, the sports team has an Instagram account that they need to be on, or there's a, like, you can get creative with that. Like, give them 5 minutes on the computer to log into your Instagram, and like, there's just ways around not opening that.
Giving them an Instagram account on your phone. The account's on your phone. You can sit right next to them.
Yes.
You don't have to, like, oh, you need this one thing. Sweet. We're going to give you a supercomputer that's thousands of dollars and put in your pocket and expect you to make good decisions. No, that's not how that works. Yeah. So mom and dad, I think something that everyone listening can do, I just want you to go through and think of just one or two ways that you can scale back on the technology in your home. One or two ways that you can spend a little less time on your phones. And that goes for the whole family. Maybe sit down as a whole family and talk about it. Hey, what are some ways that we can spend less time on our devices? What are some places in the home where we should never have our devices? You'd be surprised the things your kids will come up with, the great things your kids will come up with. And so that is a great place to start. So, okay, this has been such a good discussion. I love talking with you. This is fun. How can people see what you got going on? Shameless plug time. Let's hear it.
Yeah. I started an Instagram account a few months back. So you can find me at the Smartphone Effect. And I just try to send out good studies and tips and education that way, so that hopefully we can change this narrative that we see happening and get the pendulum going the other way.
Kick that sucker.
It's enough.
So all of that will be in the podcast description. So please go check her out. She's doing amazing things and sharing great info for everybody. And just as a reminder, if you'd like Save the Kids to come speak to your community, please fill out a speaker request form in the podcast description. Let's go save some kids. Always remember, you are wonderful, you are worthy, and you are worth it. Go home and give your kids an 8-second hug, and we'll see you on the next one.